Welcome to Grumpy Strategists, episode 20. Yes, the Grumpy Strategist turns 20. I'm Michael Shoopridge, and I'm here with SAA's head of research, Dr. Marcus Hellyer, but as usual, he's not here.
No, I am calling in from the annual conference of the International Cultic Studies Association.
Not Celtic, but cultic. Yes.
Because I think we're both very worried that the AUKUS Pillar 1 nuclear submarine program has many of the trappings of a cult, and we may need to either perform an intervention or at least help some of the people as they escape the cult essentially return to normality.
Well, from being at previous cultic conferences, I know that de-radicalization of former cult members is one of those intractable things. It's very like de-radicalizing extremists of any other kind.
It's a very difficult journey, but it needs to start with people acknowledging they need help, and I don't think we're at that point yet.
But we will talk about AUKUS and the phenomenon of the AUKUS cult. Other than that, we were hoping this episode was going to be a forensic look at last week's Senate estimate. But for that to happen, the government would have to have released transcripts. Well, Parliament would, but the government officials and ministers look at them first. That hasn't happened.
No, it's very odd because it is now, by my count, 12 days since the finance estimates hearings and the ASC...
Submarine Corporation.
Yes. Well, it's not called the Submarine Corporation anymore, but it's just ASC. It's like KFC. You know,
yeah, doesn't
like,
need to
ask a young person what KFC stands for and they're like, well, it's just KFC.
Finger licking good chicken.
You know, ask a young person what ASC stands for and they're going to say, what are you talking about? But anyway, it's the Submarine Corporation.
The company formerly known as the Australian Submarine Corporation.
That one. Yeah. And so the CEO was giving testimony at finance estimates because the ASC is owned by the Department of Finance. And he said, oops, the columns, we pulled some of them apart. They've got terrible corrosion, a lot of work going on. And so we've got a bunch of columns out of the water at the moment. In fact, more than we've had before. And so that sort of hit the news a bit. And I missed all of that, but I haven't been able to go back and look at the transcripts because they haven't been published yet. What was really interesting is that at defense estimates last week, there was this huge pile on with defense officials saying, no, that's not true. Corrosion happens every day. Not a big deal. We have boats out of the water all the time. We certainly don't have more boats out of the water than any time before. Nothing to see here. And yet those transcripts aren't out either. So the inner conspiracy theorist in me is going, maybe there's a bit of rewriting going on, but maybe Hansard is just really busy at the moment. I don't know.
Well, transcripts are actually quite easy and the technology's got even better. They either said it or they didn't. So what you can have happening with the transcript production is more editing out this bit unintelligible. So you can remove stuff. You can't really put more stuff in. And I wouldn't be surprised if a process of excision and removal is happening with these transcripts.
We did have a public holiday, but I cannot remember an occasion where I've had to wait 12 days for even a draft Hansard transcript.
Yeah, I'm not going to make this a submarine episode, but I will say if that response out of the defence officials was meant to be reassuring. So the ASC head, Mr. Wiley, says, look, we've got three boats out of the water. That's the largest number we've ever had out of the water. And the corrosion problems are bad. We don't yet have a fix, but they'll be out for months. And defence's response is, well, that's actually not a problem because that's business as usual. If it's business as usual to have half of your fleet out of the water because of corrosion problems or other problems, that's very bad news for your submarine capability. So I found it the opposite of reassurance because I think there'd been a book put out by a former colleague of ours, Dr. Andrew Davies. He left ASPE pretty much as we arrived. But
he didn't leave because we arrived.
That's a rumour.
We arrived because he left.
Well, that's a rumour. That's a separate episode, those circumstances. But he'd put out a book talking about the recovery journey for Collins. But if we take the defence officials at their word, there wasn't really a recovery. The thing's been bumping along in trouble for ages. And I'm not sure that's true. I think the Collins have been viable for some time, but it shows this very strange mindset of denial of any problem. And when you're looking at keeping an aging submarine in service, you don't want that mindset.
Well, it was sort of ironic. Now, I will say, because the transcripts aren't out, we can't really validate exactly what Stuart Wiley said or what the defence officials said unless we sit down and look through the entire video, which life is too short to do. But the day before Mr. Wiley gave his testimony, we published a piece on SAA about the Collins life of Titan type extension and said, look, let's strip away all the BS about Collins is going to serve into the 2040s. We're not going to have the people or resources to keep it going that long. It's not making it out of the 2030s. So let's have a cold, hard look at what the LOT, the life of type extension, really needs to be, the scope of it, the number of boats, how much cost and risk we want to do.
How long they need to actually serve for.
And it was just kind of ironic that the next day, bad news about Collins. Ooh. Anyway, what I will say is one defense official, the guy who runs the submarine sustainment program, mm-hmm. very good guy. I used to know him back in defense, and he actually does try to provide real answers there, which probably won't help his career inside defense. But anyway, one of the things he very clearly said is that the existing full cycle dockings of the Collins, so this 2-year process where they're taken out of the water every 10 years and pulled apart.
The major work, the major overhaul.
Yeah. He said, look, they're not taking 2 years, they're taking 2.5 years. The last two have taken 2.5 years. And because the first one goes over, it impacts the second one.
Yep.
So even before we get into the life of type extension, we're starting to see that sustainment timeline blow out, which means you have less boats available and increases risk.
I just don't get the incredible defensiveness from the officials on this. The Chief of Navy said something like, Australia's incredibly open about our submarines, but I'm starting to think there are limits of that. And the signal I thought he was sending out of that was there's going to be even less public disclosure around the submarines. We've been on this trajectory before around defence, but it serves no useful purpose for defence to tell the public nothing, because it undercuts public support for spending anything on defence, and I think it lets poor performance go unchecked.
Well, this wasn't going to be the submarine episode, but since we're here, we may as well just cover off on one more thing about submarines at estimates. And
then you've got to promise me we're going to get off submarines.
Then we will get off submarines. Right. But a particular senator, who we will not name, asked a question to Vice Admiral Jonathan Meade, the head of the nuclear submarine program. What happens if we, in the end, don't get any nuclear submarines? The money we're giving to the UK and the US to uplift their industrial capability, sort of $4 billion here, $4.5 billionaire.
So the scenario is a future US president calls up the Australian Prime Minister and says, Mrs. Prime Minister, I'm very sorry to tell you, but the deal to sell you Virginia submarines is off, because the head of the US Navy and the nuclear submarine force and the Secretary of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs have all come to me and told me that we need every submarine for the United States. So I'm terribly sorry, but we won't be selling you Virginia. So in that circumstance, the good news is we would have got a cast iron agreement, wouldn't we? Because it's not just a handshake, it's not just about trust with the Americans and the UK. This has got a legal and commercial underpinning. We'd get the $9 billion of industrial uplift money back, wouldn't we?
Well, that's a hypothetical, and I don't answer hypotheticals, Michael.
But there'd be an agreement now saying that, wouldn't there?
Look, they're going to give us submarines. So you're raising a hypothetical, and I don't answer hypotheticals.
I think the good news is that boilerplate way of avoiding an answer that officials try failed in this case, because what's in a written agreement now is not a hypothetical. And it turns out there is no clawback mechanism. So there's the money that we hand over, if the Americans decide not to give us a single submarine, we get none of it back. And you would not do that in any field of life with your own money, and you should not do it with public money.
Well, certainly in an area like shipbuilding, because the three major strands of our shipbuilding program to date of submarines, frigates, and patrol vessels have all had major problems resulting in what we were expecting to happen not happen.
Well, in fact, so, the submarine one, the precedent of the reason why we are now getting nuclear submarines is the previous program, apparently wasn't giving us what we needed, but it ended in industrial and financial acrimony involving flushing Australian public money down the toilet.
Yes.
And we know, therefore, that at least submarine programs can end in tears. So it's an entirely foreseeable thing, even if you don't want it to happen, that this might not work. And so putting sensible commercial and legal arrangements in place seems to me just to be a public duty.
Well, yes, as my hero Bent Flivberg, the guy who knows mega projects, said 99.5% of mega projects do not deliver against cost, schedule, and benefit, i.e. capability. And so this is why I raised my cultic point earlier. If we somehow think that this program is going to deliver exactly as advertised, I'm not going to say it's going to be cancelled, I'm not going to say it's not going to deliver, but if we think it's going to be delivered as advertised, you are now a member of a cult.
Yes.
You have thrown away rational thought, yep. Which means you have thrown away all of those precautions one would normally take entering into a high-risk activity.
Reminds me of a young woman or young man who's deeply in love with someone. You know, they're perfect, the romance is perfect.
I thought we had a rule, no biographical stories, Michael.
And this is going to be beautiful.
I mean, do we have to listen to your childhood all over again?
We do. Okay. This isn't me, but the idea of when this young person is deeply in love, there's no need to do rational things. You know, the fact that they've got enormous family fortune and the person that they're in deep romantic love with is destitute and has been married 6 times before, that doesn't matter to them.
Oh my God, how many times do I have to hear your life story?
All I'd say is nuclear submarines costing hundreds of billions of dollars, involving legal and commercial undertakings between entities across 3 nations, need a strong legal, logical underpinning. And it'd be nice to think that Australian officials charged with implementing this program understood that and also understood the value of leverage. So if a US president is thinking about cancelling the deal, that the future Mrs. Australian Prime Minister can respond, "That's interesting, Mr. President, but you realise you'll owe
president.
Me, or Mrs. President, you will owe me $6 billion if that happens, rather than, but I thought this was love." Anyway, let's get off submarines.
For an episode that's not talking about submarines, we've talked a lot about submarines. What I want to know, Michael, you've been in the US. In fact, you've just gotten off the plane, barely touched down. I mean, I can see your sad, droopy, jet-lagged eyes.
That's conjunctivitis.
Oh, okay. Yep. You had your finger on the pulse there of the election. Tell me, what's the vox pop in the US about the election?
A lot of people don't know, but I'm actually a very experienced pollster and a sampler of opinions. So I would have spoken, I would say, with maybe 80 Americans in a week. And some of that was just polite chit-chat in the margins of being part of a fabulous report by a US think tank, National Bureau of Asian Research, which had the Japanese, Philippines, Vietnamese, Australian and Indian experience of the PLA military behaving dangerously towards them.
Experiencing being on the receiving end of Chinese grey zone operations.
Well, not
fantastic report, if I may say so.
Thank you. Well, the point it makes is this isn't grey zone. This is overt, out in the open. Risking killing the people of other militaries as a deliberate policy choice by Xi Jinping and the leaders around him.
Now, anyway, I was there for that. One thing I found quite striking about that report is there is a range of opinions there on how much the receiving country should actually publicize this. And your view is you should, you know, yell it loud and clear that the Chinese are behaving this way. Other countries seem to go, well, maybe not, because it just provokes them.
Well, most of the contributors, Vietnam, Japan, India, Philippines, do think that publicising is worthwhile. But in presenting this report to officials in Canberra and officials in Washington, that's where the mixed view came in. It should be just shut up. And certainly the Philippines ASEAN partners would like the Philippines to shut up so they can just get on with business. But my judgment did get changed a bit by these discussions, because just disclosing this now consistent pattern where the PLA is deliberately risking killing or injuring other militaries as an act of policy to dominate the region. Just disclosing that, if you're doing nothing to reverse or stop that, you're just really doing China's work for them. So you should only disclose if you're then doing something to oppose and frustrate that policy, because otherwise you're just a marketing arm for the Chinese Communist Party.
Anyway, it's a great piece of work. I would commend it to our listeners, but that was a bit of a digression. Back to the vox pop, the word on the street about the election.
So, 80 people. Some of them were deeper conversations, catching up with friends that I'd met when I was in Washington for 2.5 years. Some of them were the classic, you know, keeping your finger on the pulse by talking to people in Ubers, the new taxi driver, and just people at various events other places like the mall.
So who's going to win?
Well, this is a deep psychosocial sampling exercise. Mm. And from this, I came away thinking that Trump is going to win.
Mm.
And the main judgment I have from all these different Americans is a feeling of numbness and depression about this. So I think there are four or five groupings of Americans.
Okay, why don't you run us through these groupings?
Well, you've got a bunch of people that are rusted on Democrats, and to say that they're underwhelmed and unexcited kind of underplays it. They are plain glum. Mm. So they're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to vote for Biden, not because they want to, but because they kind of have to.
But in an optional voting system where it's not mandatory, you've got to mobilize people. And it's hard to mobilize people to vote against something. It's easy to mobilize people to vote for something. My sense is there's not a lot of people voting for Biden.
No.
You know, they'll vote against Trump, but it's that issue of getting people out to vote.
I didn't meet anyone who is energized about the prospect of voting for Joe Biden for another term. Yeah,
whereas there are people who are energized about voting for Trump.
Well, that's the second bunch of people, and they are Republicans. But to be a Republican now, you kind of are a MAGA kind of person.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them were, well, look, you know, I don't really want to talk about what's going on in Washington. This is people who live in Washington as well saying that, because I was only in Dallas and Washington. But, you know, Trump is the guy. He did great stuff for the economy. Biden's too old. Trump's the guy with the energy. Voting for Trump.
Trump's pretty old too, but that's
well,
part
he's
of Biden.
The younger of the older guys.
Yeah.
So there's quite.
If it wasn't for Biden winning this election, would Trump be the oldest president if he wins next time? I think he might.
I think he might. Yeah. At the end, yes. So there's the MAGA Trump people. You know, that they're all in on Trump, and they're the kind of people that the court case just shows everyone was out to get
but
Trump.
Were there a lot of sort of beltway insiders in that case, in that camp?
No, they're more in the glum, which is the next group is, look.
Group three.
Neither Biden nor Trump is someone I really feel like we should have better candidates. Mm. But they'd say, yeah, look, I'm not that excited. We should have better candidates. Then there'd be a big long pause, and they'd say, so that means I got to vote for Trump.
They've sort of got a point in the sense of there's 325 million people in the US. So we're about a third of a billion. Are you telling me that Trump and Biden are the best two people you can come up with? It's so depressing.
Well, the Washington insiders are chronically depressed about that. And then there's the other group of Americans, and your point about it's not compulsory voting is important here, where they just did not want to talk about the election, talk about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the Maverick's doing, what's Celtic up to, that just anything else, you know, where's the best barbecue place in town, just don't make me talk about the election. That's just Washington. I'm just going to get on with my life. So I didn't get the feeling there's a large energized pool of people wanting to vote. And then the last group of people
is what, four? Are we up to four? I've lost track. Is this four or five?
We're up to five now.
Five, I think.
Yeah, four.
We're not good at numbers here.
No. The last group are the full-on conspiracy people. Mm. So I had a sort of outlier experience with one of these people in Dallas. Spent quite a bit of time, and the extent of the conspiracy was extraordinary.
An Uber driver?
Yeah, a long, long trip. Felt longer than it actually was. So George Soros is actually behind most events in the world. He's in cahoots with Bill Gates, who I thought he'd done good work developing a vaccine funding model that helped with COVID.
Sorry, vaccines, good work?
No, he hadn't. He'd actually been infecting people in Africa, apparently, according to this person. But
are you sure this isn't group two again?
The mega group.
Yeah.
I think there's some crossover.
Okay. The Venn diagram overlaps quite a bit.
Yeah, and there are, I won't bore you with the rest of this conspiracy theory, except to mention that the world actually has a large number of pyramids. They're everywhere. The largest pyramid is in Poland. Yes, and there's
Invisible pyramid? Or?
It's been covered up for years by the elites.
Right.
And then the last element in this conspiracy theory, or two elements, Putin invaded Ukraine to destroy US bio labs, so he's actually a good guy, according to
this. I have heard this one before,
And then last element is there are a series of global portals which people have used from biblical times to now to teleport themselves around the planet. And a lot of those are known to various world governments which are hiding them from their populations, including in a large number of US national parks where the parts of the parks that are walled off are actually part of this global
there
portal
I was thinking
network.
They're walled off to stop people, idiot tourons, falling into the hot geysers of mud in Yellowstone, but it's actually actually hiding the pyramids.
Okay. You're sounding like you might be part of this. Anyway, so they're the different groups. And the last bit of my psychosocial sampling, which really did help me crystallize the findings of this assessment, was walking through the mall in Washington and looking at the different food trucks and the souvenir sellers. So lots of different kinds of food, a lot of Mexican food. Yeah. But the striking thing about the souvenir sellers, to me, was you can buy a lot of USA, you know, USA, USA stuff. You can buy a huge amount of MAGA and Trump stuff.
Yeah.
You cannot buy a single Biden cap or even earmuff.
Yeah. And there's the market at work.
Yep. So all the energy is with Trump, and a great bunch of the others are just plain glum.
Yeah. I was at a lunch last week, and there was a foreign diplomat, senior diplomat there, who was saying, well, you look at all the demographics and, you know, it all sort of leans towards Biden, you know, whether young people don't like Trump, women don't like Trump, a lot of minorities don't like Trump. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, but 8 years ago we were in that same situation, Trump versus Hillary Clinton. And I was a firm believer there in that you look at the demographics, it just does not add up for the Republicans in general, and for Trump in particular, didn't matter. The demographics didn't matter because it is not mandatory voting.
That's right.
I think we're in the same situation this time round.
Yeah, so to me, the energy, and if it was feng shui or ley lines, all the energy is on the Trump side of the ledger. Yeah. So now we can talk about a couple of little snippets out of estimates. One about this guided weapons and explosive ordnance enterprise.
Are you going to trigger me? You're going to trigger me, Michael.
Well, I'm going to...
Don't say the phrase... You're going to say the phrase.
I am. Right? I'm going to combine it with AI, though. So okay. It's going to get... So it's AI Goyo. So the official responsible for the guided weapons enterprise in defense mentioned at estimates that he's got a strategy. It's endorsed by government.
Here it comes.
Here it is. The crawl, walk, run strategy. And he's now in the crawl phase because you can't expect to do anything fast. This is very complex. I reacted to this in one way, which was to think, but if we've been crawling to walk to run now, surely we should be at least walking, because the first time a guided weapons enterprise was
4 years
made
ago,
a priority,
the
was 4 years
strategic
ago.
Strategic update.
Was that July? What date?
1st of July. 2020, yep, that was when the government kicked off the GUIO.
And then a year from then, well, not even a year, it's more like 9 months, in March 2021, the then Prime Minister Scott Morrison and the then Defence Minister, now opposition leader, Peter Dutton, put out a joint release saying it was being urgently accelerated because defence needed supply chains for these things.
Yep, and we've picked two strategic partners. Unfortunately,
Lockheed Martin and Raytheon.
Yes, those strategic partners are primes who I think have an interest in making sure we continue to crawl rather than actually run, because if we run, we might run off in a different direction from buying their stuff. But separate point.
Yeah,
I will also note that one of those strategic partners, Raytheon, just went through a night of the long knives, and they're essentially their entire senior leadership team in Australia got booted out the door. So I'm not sure that will help us move from walking to crawling or crawling to walking.
But I just thought to myself, all right, let's take crawl, walk, run seriously. How long does it take a human to crawl and then walk and then run?
Well, I look back at my kids. I was certainly crawling at 9 months and walking at a year.
Yeah, but the average is a human from the time of birth takes 8 to 8.5 months to be crawling.
Mm-hmm.
And then they walk at 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they're running pretty much very quickly after.
Oh, it take your eye from for a second and it disappears.
So, in fact, it's that distinction between walking and running almost doesn't exist for your toddler. They're like they're like an unguided weapon at speed. So
what you're saying is 4 years is not particularly good if we're still crawling.
Well, in human terms, you can conceive a human baby and 9 months later have a human baby. That human baby is crawling 8 months after that and walking 12 months after that. So 21 months from having the idea, and more than just the idea, acting to implement it, you have a walking entity. Yeah. Whereas we're now four years the guided weapons enterprise. And
well, sometime next year, Michael, we might be crawling. Because apparently the first weapons will be coming off an Australian production line. Gimlar's missiles,
So we'll be, we will be crawling
5 years.
Crawling after 5 years.
Yep.
So if that was a human baby, you'd have various interventions because you'd be worried about the speed of development.
You'd be very worried.
Yeah. That baby, if it's only crawling at 5 years, is never going to run.
So what I find so frustrating is defence seniors use this term as a kind of mark of honour. Or to say we're serious people. We've got a plan. We're not just going to
rush
do things quickly. No. That's leads to ruin. So we're going to be very measured. And they sit there and we've got this measured plan and we're going to crawl, walk, run. And
because they don't want to waste public money. Yeah.
I don't think the Ukrainians have a crawl, walk, run. Strategy.
There wouldn't be Ukraine if they were if they had a crawl, walk, run. They would have been conquered by Putin.
If you talk to Australian industry, they're going, we can run now. If you actually empower us, if you back us and you give us money, we can run now. Look,
but look, there's no company in Australia that's able to make rockets that have ranges of hundreds of kilometres.
Well, Michael, I would suggest you look at Black Sky Aerospace.
Well, there's them, sure.
you had as a guest an Australian.
Gilmore Space. Well, they can't make rockets to go 50 kilometres because they can only make rockets that put things into orbit.
And Inovero makes long-range killer drones.
Oh, right. So there's only
three. Australian industry can do this now. We won't back them. I will give a little story here because it was one of those moments when I realised defence is beyond saving. So nearly 2 years ago, I was at a weapons of death trade show in the US and the Defence Export Office had taken a bunch of Australian companies over there, you know, as part of this
export
promotion. And they also take over two-star officers to be spokesmen for Australian industry. Now, why you would take over Australian two-stars who refuse to buy Australian stuff to be the spokespeople is beyond me.
Well, they might know a friend in another military who has bought the stuff.
Mm. So I'm talking to an Australian company there that I know, and I said, so how's this stuff going? And he's good. We've sold to these other countries. And I said, so has the Australian Defence Force bought any of your stuff? And he looked at me with this sort of sad, despairing face and said, what do you think? You know, of course the answer is no.
Yeah.
So then I go and talk to one of the two stars there and said, so why haven't you bought his stuff? Because he's sold them to these other companies and they've actually been in service. So to other countries and they've been in service for other countries. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, the thing is, it's only at TRL level 7.
Technology,
you know,
readiness.
And if he can put some skin in the game and put some of his own money in the game and get it to TRL 9, then I might buy it. So you've got this view. So defence people who don't put any of their own skin in the game want this little Aussie company to put more money in to get it up to TRL 9.
Yep.
And you go, but hang on, we were willing to spend $6 billion, $6 billion to get the attack class submarine to the point where you could start building it.
Yes.
$6 billion is the approved budget for the Hunter-class frigate.
Again, to get
to the point where you start building it.
Lord knows how much there will be for getting
tens of billions
the concept
for SSN.
Design for the AUKUS SSN and then beyond there.
You know, but this little Aussie company, they have to take all of the risk here. Yeah. And by the way, if you've hit TRL 9 in the killer drone space, you're already obsolete because the world has moved on.
Yeah. So I heard a lot about AUKUS and back to the cult. You can't question the purpose of the cult or its rightness. If you raise a question about the Bhagwan, the great cult leader's expenditure on Rolls Royce and fast women, you get expelled from the cult or beaten up till you recant.
It's funny you should mention expenditure on Rolls Royce, but anyway, that's a separate point.
I think the real cringes in the Australian defence and security debate are those who don't see that Australian companies are already running with solutions that would be so useful to our military and add to our military power. And they insist that we can only crawl and only then with the assistance of big US primes who are struggling to run themselves. So the real cringes are those who won't open their eyes to what Australians are already doing.
Yes, well, let me just say that one of the things, again, that made me think we are now in this cult is when the CDF at a conference basically said, all the people who are questioning AUKUS, you've got to stop doing it. It's going to happen. Look, stop being un-Australian. Stop being the tall poppy people. Just look at the Sydney Opera House, the Harbour Bridge, Snowy Hydro, all of those things, all of these Aussie can-do things.
Not the current incarnation of Snowy
Hydro. Not the current.
Not 2.0.
Snowy 2.0. Guano that yeah. went from whatever it was, you know, 2 billion to 20 billion. But
yeah, with what's that total? Boney the Bogged? I can't remember the total.
What's the name? Yeah, the big digger that keeps getting yeah. stuck. Anyway, yeah. so you're basically un-Australian if you question AUKUS. Meanwhile, all of these great leaders won't back Australian industry
yes.
to do things that they can do already.
Yes. So who is un-Australian? And if you really want something to work, critical analysis should be welcome to you. So I said we'd make a connection to AI.
Yes.
And I think the interesting thing about AI, there's this great paper, and you're reading the extended version. I read the summary version. I think I will now read the extended version by Leopold Aschenberger.
Aschenbrenner.
Aschenbrenner. I knew I'd get that wrong.
Young German man. He's only 22. And this is the amazing thing is like, okay, in defense, you got to be a 3-star. So in your 50s before you're allowed to have an opinion on anything.
Yeah.
We're reading this amazing work, really sort of kind of challenging.
And, yes.
By a 22-year-old from right. out of Silicon Valley.
To me, it was a compelling piece of analysis about the speed of change of AI. And he just looks at the achievements over the last 5 years and the likely areas for further improvements in the next 5. And in very conservative ways, even if only the lower end of his projections happen for things like computing, the compute element of AI, he says, been gains between 2019 and 2024 of 3.5 to 4 orders of magnitude. The efficiency of the algorithms, gain of 1 to 2 orders of magnitude. So that's, you know, 10 or 100 times better. An unhobbling of, you know, just freeing up what the system can do, mm-hmm. perhaps another 2 orders of magnitude. And then he projects just 2023 to 2027, so just 4 years, yeah. there'll be more multiple order of magnitude gains in the design of the hardware, the algorithmic efficiency, and who knows what else yeah. from unhobbling.
Yeah, well, he says, well, look at GPT-3, which was 4 years ago, a bit over 4 years ago, and that could basically make vaguely coherent sentences. And we'd yes. all go, oh, you know, ask it a question and give you a vaguely coherent yeah. answer. And he goes, well, it's sort of like preschooler level intelligence. Mm. And you go 4 years later to ChatGPT-4, which was essentially a bit over a year ago, and you're going, wow, that can actually cheat and do your high school homework for you.
Can do some medical tests, for example. We could have a doctor who's GPT.
It can write a better answer than many university undergraduates. Well, yes. That was 4 years.
Yeah.
So you simply project out the same rate of development, and in 4 years' time, artificial intelligence will be better than your most skilled PhD graduates.
Well, this is the term AGI, isn't it? So that he's talking about an artificial general intelligence that, you know, his version is you will have a skilled independent engineer who is able to do the work of a skilled independent engineer. And
you will have thousands, millions of them.
Well, and that skilled independent engineer can train itself and others to be even more skilled, so you're likely to get compounding gains out of that.
So,
the 2027.
Yeah, not far away. So I'm reading this and, you know, my head's sort of exploding as I'm processing this, and I'm going, what do I do? Do I run out and buy stocks in Google, or do I run out and buy stocks in the gas companies, which are going to be generating the electricity for all of the data centers, or do I just hook up my camper trailer, drive out into the desert and wait for the robots to hunt down the last human survivor on the face of the planet? So
I'm doing all three things. And the good news is you can probably buy one of those lovely, like aluminium, burnished aluminium called Gulfstream, I think, or the aero-shaped ones,
beautiful,
the beautiful caravans. Yeah. Live in the desert with the wealth you're getting from investing in Google, mm-hmm. Microsoft, Nvidia, and
until
and
about
others.
2028, until yeah. they come looking.
So live well until the robots go.
But what I'm struck by is, well, first of all, is, you know, this 22-year-old is writing this book, and he's very plugged in Silicon Valley.
Well, and Harvard, Silicon Valley, OpenAI, and this guy does have credibility. Yes,
you know, and you compare that to defense, where, you know, you got all these 50-year-olds running the show because you got to be 50 before you can have an opinion. But then you contrast this story, which is not science fiction, really. It's, I mean, the interpretation of what it all means. You know, there's room for interpretation there, but it's pretty much a straight line prognostication.
Well, a lot of it is conservative mathematics.
It's just mathematics. Yeah. And yet you listen to defense and it's like crawl, walk, run. So we're going to hobble ourselves by insisting we can only crawl.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the future, as we've said before, is running away from us.
Yes.
And we are led by people whose mindset is, we've got to crawl.
Isn't it interesting? You know, we started by talking about the speed of development of a human and how they're running much faster than these government strategies. And now we're talking about artificial intelligence and how it is also running at speeds that are wholly different to the way defense organizations
are. I don't want to, I know we tend to get pretty negative, but I just have zero confidence in the leadership of the Department of Defense that they have any inkling of the speed of change and the flexibility they need to operate.
That's where I think reading something like this work from
Aschenbrenner.
I'm getting it even more wrong. Reading this is a real eye-opener, because even if some of it goes around and over your head, not that it would yours, but mine, the compelling insights and the rate of change are the two things that really struck me. So I hope someone somewhere in Russell One at some senior level will take a moment and read this paper. Hopefully we will put a link on the website. Anyway, lovely to talk with you. I'll let you get back to the proceedings. I saw there was something about the Druids on the agenda at your cultic conference.
Cultic, not Celtic.
Well, but they're a Celtic cult.
They're a Celtic, I guess. Okay.
So I look forward to getting some of those papers as well. Fantastic to talk with you. And
welcome back, Michael.
Wouldn't mind doing more psychosocial sampling at some time on other events. Anyway, great to talk with you, Marcus.
You too.